Hello and welcome to the Tomorrow Brands podcast, where we ask a series of experts what makes a brand of tomorrow. I'm your host, Ruth Fittock, Managing Partner at Tomorrow Brands, a consultancy that helps international brands launch and scale in the UK. Today, I'm joined by Nicole Compan. After a decade of experience in brand and marketing management, Nicole founded travelling retail concept Ray the Store in June 2021. More than simply a place to shop, Ray is cultivating an ecosystem that aligns brands, consumers, and industry figures who are motivated by the same ethics of well-being and building challenger brands to diversify the marketplace of the future. We talk today about what 2025 might have in store. Hope you enjoy. Hi, Nicole. Thanks for coming on the podcast today. It would be great before we start just to hear a bit about you and Ray, what you guys are up to.
Of course. So I'm Nicole. I founded Ray back in June 21. My background is in brand and marketing, and Ray is a result of the professional background and my personal interest in anything food, health, well-being related. And essentially, Ray the Store is all about creating awareness and recognition for emerging food, drink, wellness and beauty brands. And that's done through physical retail spaces, with kind of exposure to both consumers as well as industry players. So essentially, I created a business around my profession and my personal interests.
And you do, how many stores is it you do a year, roughly?
Roughly, I would say 3 to 4. The aim has always been to host one every season. Sometimes that has worked out, sometimes been a bit challenging with location search, but that's, yeah, a whole different story.
And you have how many brands in the average store?
Depending on the size of the space we take, it varies between about 60 to 100. So far, we've run 12 stores, which has given us a community of over 700 brands across the four categories, which to me is still mind-blowing when I say it out loud, because we work with every brand directly, which is very exciting. And it means that we're part of a lot of journeys.
And that is why I thought you'd be the perfect person to talk to about trends and what we think is coming up in food, drink, wellness, FMCG generally this year. So we're in January, always a time where we start looking ahead. And obviously with just the volume of brands that you see, it's like you're very close, but the coalface there of what's new and emerging, and also with your relationship with retailers too, and seeing what they're interested in and how things develop over time too, given that you have such a high frequency of stores, how things are changing. So I thought it'd be interesting to get your perspective on what we think is ahead for 2025 in terms of trends. And probably a good place to start, there's always macro trends and micro trends coming up, and there's things that have been around for a while, and health being a trend that has been at the forefront of people's minds now for years and years, but just doesn't seem to be going anywhere and just seems to be evolving and strengthening. So yeah, I'd love to get your perspective on where we are with health and what you think is next.
Definitely health is on people's minds. And obviously over time, it feels like it has evolved from a specific type of ingredients standing out. At some point, CBD was booming, whereas now it feels like it has shifted over the last 12 months to mushroom products, but then also a big awareness around gut health, which I feel like is still building momentum. And it just, and overall, it takes time to build people's and especially consumers' education and their knowledge around what is actually beneficial for you versus what is marketing language.
So I actually remember seeing you in the last store and you said, no, there's no CBD this time around. Whereas at one point it was like almost a whole fixture. And I know in the US, it's totally dropped away, but because you can get THC now in the US and cannabis is legal in a lot of states. And I wonder why that's happened here, whether that's the tail end, because from our experience, some US trends make it over here, not all, and that actually we're at different stages and we lead on something. So it's interesting what's happened there with CBD.
Yeah, definitely. Because at some point it was, in my point of view, like everywhere, from like drinks to obviously drops to balms to even pet products where it was used. So yeah, I had any kind of, and I still think there is a health benefit, like with certain people going through like medical conditions or things like that, where there's still research being built around it. It is an interesting point, and it's actually something that I'm like trying to get my head around this as well. Like, how has that gone from about 3 years ago, it was like extremely on the up, and now it's almost being muted in a way. I also wonder if that has something maybe to do with kind of the rules in the UK around what is allowed. And from my experience, like certain till systems or payment providers wouldn't support processing CBD products. So that was something that, yeah, we dealt with as well as a retail environment. So it feels, and even advertisement maybe has been always been challenging for that specific category.
I think they changed the guidance, didn't they, on how much you're allowed, and then it actually dropped below what people thought worked. And I guess actually the other thing mentioned about whether it's just been supplanted by other things. So it started that idea of functionality, and now we have mushrooms and nootropics and lots of other different types of ingredients that have just taken over, and still feels like mushrooms, you mentioned, feels like that we're just at the beginning of that, or maybe it'll be another CBD. We'll see.
Yeah. And I think it's again, like one of those ingredients where people are still very much, the general consumer still very much trying to get their head around of what is it, how does it benefit me, how should I consume it, again, because there's now so many options and ways that you can digest a mushroom product. Like, we've seen it in obviously drinks as well as supplements, like snack bars even, which is all great. But when it comes to consumers asking questions, it's very often around, but what does actually work? Or can I take it with something else that I also take? And it's a lot of questions, like often these products are included in one specific, these ingredients are included in one specific product, but people are trying to figure out how can I integrate it into my daily life without doing any harm because I already take another supplement. So that is, I feel like there's still a lot of education to be done around the functional mushrooms.
And the functional comes with the price tag. Consumers are generally happy to pay more for functional across the board, but there's got to be a belief in the efficacy to justify that ultimately. To your point, there's so many different types of mushrooms. How do you use them? What for? When? In what quantities? And functional doesn't feel like it's going anywhere, but everything's functional now, right? To your point of all the things you just listed, which can have functional benefits. And that is quite confusing, I think.
Yeah. And I think another functional element, as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot around gut health as well, which I think is a topic that is here to stay because people are more mindful of their overall, I guess, consumption and like quality of products. Gut health just plays into that.
Fiber is a really good call, obviously. Protein, another trend within health that has been growing and doesn't seem to be going away. And I was talking to someone in the US about how, again, like the protein content of things is tipping up. So it used to be 10 grams, now it's 20, and now you're getting products coming out that are like 35 grams of protein. Fiber does feel like, again, it's been one of those ones that's been bubbling away underneath the surface, whether that's now, given last year, big gut health, lots about probiotics, prebiotics. Obviously, we see a lot of the gut health sodas coming out, and whether this year we'll see fiber becoming a bigger claim in more categories.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those call outs that you see a lot more on the front of a pack of a bar or a cereal or
a drink. It's funny, isn't it? I also think, so we've got functionality, mushrooms, fiber, like hydration being a claim, which is again interesting. Electrolytes, which is again funny because my business partner Phil used to work at Coke, and Gatorade has been talking about electrolytes for decades, and now electrolytes are back, but they're new, but they're not. And they've been, it's like Gatorade, Powerade, these drinks have been around for years, and it's more about cleaner formulas, different formats, so sachets, powders, as well as maybe healthier soft drinks. And I think targeted at a broader audience. So it's not just for like post-workout, it's for every day. A lot of us are dehydrated. And I know the brand Punchy, for example, they've just brought out a hydration drink, which is far more of an on-the-go. It's in a can, you have it with your lunch. More for your average person versus an athlete or someone who's just been to the gym. But I think we're going to see more of that, especially in the kind of stick and sachet format of stuff that you add to drinks. Again, a lot more of that in the US at the moment as well.
Yeah, we've definitely seen it over here as well with sachets on the go. You just simply add to water or sparkling water.
The thing that's driven that is actually is people carrying water bottles. So suddenly that's created a whole new occasion where you've got a drink on the go with you at all times and you can add something to it. So again, like 5-10 years ago, when not everyone carried a water bottle, that just wouldn't have happened. So I think it's always interesting as well as you get the trend. And then the other thing that sort of made, has enabled it to happen. And then I think the other thing I want to talk about in health is this sort of clean label, which I think has been driven. There was a lot of chat last year about UPF. That's probably a term no one knew what that meant before last year. And that really feels like that's having some impact on both consumers and the industry and what people are looking for.
Yeah, I think just overall, whatever is listed on a nutritional label or like the ingredients, people are looking to find products that they can actually like fully understand. And also very often it means that the like less ingredients, the healthier it is and the more safe people almost feel to consume it. So I think that kind of the clean labeling, natural ingredients is definitely something that will continue to be on, I guess, top of mind for people when they especially shop snack products to consume throughout the day.
And what do you think that will mean for plant-based protein? So I know, again, like plant-based has been another sort of category that got a lot of heat last year. And yet there's certain areas of it that are growing, tending to be more in those whole foods versus like the fake meat substitutes.
Yeah. I think everything like ultra processed, and that goes for animal products as well. Again, I feel like people are more mindful of it, and therefore like people within the plant-based scene tend to be looking for, I guess, a more wholesome option rather than substitutes for something that they used to have when they would eat meat. And that kind of goes to more like mushrooms being used in products or beans, legumes. It's that maybe that high in protein, like naturally high in protein products that, again, people recognize.
And I think talking about mushrooms again, and mushrooms are so interesting, right? Because they actually come in lots of different categories. I've tried some really good sort of meaty, mushroomy type alternatives. So like mushroom burgers and mushroom, even like mince, and feels like that hasn't hit yet, but it should, because it ticks all of those boxes of minimally processed mushrooms, which everyone's really into. They're just so versatile as a base for anything. Yeah. And seaweed totally. As well. Is another interesting ingredient.
It is very interesting. I don't necessarily know too much about seaweed, but I also feel like it's one of those products where people, because it's from the sea, sometimes fully like vegan people who follow a vegan diet are a bit in two minds about it. That's what I've had as feedback, but I think there is a lot of benefits in seaweed as a product as well. And it can again be used in different ways where it's like consumed as a snack or used as an ingredient in a product. I'm trying to think of an example.
I've seen a drink actually in the US, and I think it was sea moss was the ingredient, but yeah
that's a whole other product.
Different.
Yeah, definitely, because there are a few great like sea moss based drinks here as well, and even the actual sea moss, which is more jelly that you can even put in your hair on your skin, that has benefits. But sea moss as a drink is definitely something that we've seen probably picking up a little bit about a year and a half ago, but I feel like it hasn't really broken through as like a product where people are familiar with or are aware of the amazing benefits that it can give you.
Still sounds a bit gross, doesn't it? Maybe.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend having it on its own.
And I guess that also comes down to the thing that is always true about food and drink, especially in snacking and soft drinks, is it's just got to taste good. It doesn't matter how amazing it is for you, it's just got to taste good. So some of these things will always be niche, because most people, when they pick up a snack or a drink, they're looking for something tasty, which actually brings us quite nicely on to another trend, which I know you've identified, which is the exploration of global flavours.
Yeah, obviously being based in London, there's always so many options when it comes to different cuisines and restaurants to pick. But I think when it comes to consumer goods and retail products, it is definitely something that we've seen popping up more and more. Like there's a brilliant ice cream brand called Arao Ice, who we actually had part of a pop-up summer 23. And they have got amazing flavors, and it's all about flavors from the Philippines. And there's ube or pandan flavors, and it's becoming more mainstream. Like people are more aware of those kind of products that are not necessarily too familiar in like British culture or European culture. And it is something, especially like Asian flavors, that we've seen a lot around in terms of fermented products or different types of chili jams or hot sauces, ingredients like Sichuan, if that's how you say it, Sichuan peppers that are being used in kind of chili products. And Yap Kitchen is another example of a brand that uses those kind of Asian flavors. And then on top of that, yuzu is a specific ingredient that we've also seen come up in multiple types of products. And even though there's still a lot of questions around it in terms of people not necessarily knowing what yuzu is as a citrus, but being used in mostly drinks, but also a range of salad dressings that I've seen, I think is something that will keep developing as well and become more mainstream.
There's that really nice something and nothing yuzu flavored drink, which I think was my first experience with yuzu. Yeah.
My favorites as well.
And then interesting as well, that sort of fermenting and how that it's like a global flavor, but it also, again, obviously tips into gut health. And we think of kimchi, but actually goes so much broader than that in fermented hot sauces and things. It gets really interesting. I think hot sauce generally is a category to watch, that there's a lot of celebrities entering it. It's almost like the new, everyone was launching a tequila brand a couple of years ago, and now they're bringing out hot sauce brands like Ed Sheeran, Brooklyn Beckham. Sure, there's more. And again, in the US, huge category. So it does feel like that's one with lots of headroom for growth in the UK as well. And then I love this one, indulgence with a conscience. Your words.
I mean, it comes back to what you briefly touched on when it comes to people shopping for snacks. Ultimately, it comes down to flavor and kind of building demand and repeat purchases. But I feel like in general, they're almost like treating themselves, and they're looking for that almost like balancing luxury and health in a way, and consuming something without feeling guilty. So yeah, we've seen a lot of products like around snack bars, like functional snack bars that being infused with mushroom, like a brand called Lucid. And I think what they've developed brilliantly is it's recognizable flavors, as in there's one, it's banana and peanut butter, I believe. So it's like a familiar flavor palette and clean product, but it has that like either ratio alliance main in it as that functional benefit to help you get energized, or like your brain functionality, or actually like winding you down at the end of a day to help you relax. So again, it's super clean ingredients versus having that functionality. So yeah, indulgence with a conscience, I think, definitely is something that is big in the snack category.
I also think that indulgence, just full indulgence, is coming back in. So I think I saw like croissant flavored chocolate bar the other day, like super premium, I can't remember the brand, but what, like a genius flavor combination, chocolate and croissant. And I remember seeing this from focus groups years ago, that when people are being healthy, they're being healthy, and then when they want to indulge, they just want to fully indulge. And I feel like that's starting to come back in, that there's, you're seeing this max indulgent, really treaty, desserty.
Yeah, and I think overall it's all about balance, right?
And I wonder as well, it's people are drinking less, so maybe then they're like treating themselves more in other areas. We're in January, so it's a bit grim, so people are and for other reasons people are treating themselves.
Yeah, look, I also think now that you touch on alcohol, there's obviously brands out there like Quarter, Session Spirits, like where it's about lower ABV. But we've also seen categories like wine brands. There was a wine brand we had in one of the stores called 6%, and they were all about half the alcohol and half the calories. So I think, like, up until I would say about a year and a half ago, it was very much about non-alcoholic versus full strength. But the low alcoholic is definitely, I feel like, pushing through and more, especially like bars and restaurants as well.
There's a big gap in the on-trade for low and no. Like, there's still, you probably can find like Lucky Saint on the menu now. If you're in a pub, there'll probably be like some non-alcoholic beer, but there's so much available. So many great brands like Three Spirit, Mother Root, Bativo. Very hard still to find those in your local pub. There's nicer soft drinks available, but it does feel like, and those lower options that people are still drinking, but they're just drinking less. So it's, I also think in that space, the low and no, but with a functional ingredient that makes you feel something, like, so Three Spirit, it's not just about flavor. It's actually, each of them have a kind, they'll make, one of them, I think it's got a lot of caffeine in it. And it's called the Livener, and it does that. But I think that's really interesting as well. It's like you're taking out the alcohol, but there's a lot of functional ingredients elsewhere in different categories. And it feels like there's a space in low and no, is that you're still going out, you want some energy, you want to pick me up. What are the natural sort of non-alcoholic ingredients that can do that? And I feel like we'll see more of that as those functional starts to go into every category. Feels like an obvious one.
Yeah, I would love for that to be in.
No, same. Or some just nice kombuchas. It's not enough options. Yeah. And then we've talked a little about clean ingredients, but I think sustainability, another huge trend, not going anywhere, and how that might be evolving and changing in terms of what consumers want to see.
Yeah, I feel like there's obviously like the whole B Corp kind of verification that I've seen a lot like pop up on, I guess, printed on the packaging of brands, which obviously is something that shows off that the brand is being mindful about like sourcing as well as their teams and like how they look after people and environment essentially. So that's, I feel like B Corp is doing that, a level of education with customers as well by having so many brands printed that on their packaging in general. And this kind of comes down to the fact that we work with so many very early stage brands. Ultimately, sometimes you need to make certain decisions from a packaging point of view and a price point of view that may not be the most sustainable option. But I think in general, what consumers seem to be looking for is that transparency piece. And even though a brand might not be 100% sustainable, or that packaging can be more like planet friendly, as long as you communicate around the fact like why and like how you're like aiming to improve it, it is still very much accepted by consumers if something is not fully sustainable. So I think just that piece of communication from brands is very important, and not try to hide anything.
My experience, it's sad fact that consumers expect more from small brands than they do from big brands, which really isn't fair, because big brands have got the spending power to really drive change and invest in R&D but it just doesn't work that way. There's definitely an expectation there that even for tiny brands and startups that they and sometimes it's a bit unfair, because it's packaging is, it's difficult to find sustainable options, and that big change really needs to come from the big players.
And also, like, in certain cases, obviously the type of packaging may have an impact on the shelf life of a product. So there's, I guess, multiple things that come into play and decisions to be made when you're deciding on what type of packaging you use. Because if your shelf life is lower, you obviously have more food waste potentially. It's not just about the packaging, it's about other things that come into play as well.
Tough. I think a claim that we'll start to see more go more mainstream is regenerative. And obviously Wild Farmed being the brand that immediately comes to mind on that, but there'll be more. And I think that's really exciting, actually.
Yeah, for sure. Again, it's very much up and coming, and a lot of content that I've seen around it as well. It just needs to get through to the end consumer, because some of these things come with a slightly higher price point, but it is ultimately for the environment more beneficial and just better.
Yeah. One last thing I wanted to touch on is frozen, because I've started to see this come up more, and I think it's really interesting because obviously frozen is not new as a category. It's been around since sort of the beginning of people making food, but feels like the premiumization of frozen, and we, you know, we've mentioned sort of food waste and that kind of clean ingredients, and actually it's a delivery that tick a lot of boxes. And I think Strongroots really started to premiumize it a long time ago now. Before that, it was seen, I think, like Iceland, it was had this perception of lower quality, whereas the reality of it is it's actually, you get really high nutritional value. There's a great food waste story. There's a really nice frozen banana brand with the name I always get wrong. I think it's Puckpin. Puckpin. Chocolate dip frozen bananas. But yeah, if you had a point of view on that one.
Yeah, Puckpip was with us in 23 in a summer store. And I remember them handing out samples in front of the shop, and people were going crazy for it. And we're like, wow, like this is literally just banana. And then we also have seen brands like Hidden Fruits, where it's raspberries and blackberries covered in chocolate as well. So again, it's that snacking category, but with fresh fruits and that kind of indulgence with the chocolate element. Yeah, I love it. But it's definitely a category that you see more healthier versions of, very simple products being created and brought to market, and also very strong marketing around it, because it tailors both adults as well as kids, because it's such a tasty product for everyone.
Amazing. Good place to wrap up. Thanks so much, Nicole. Yeah. That was super interesting. Looking forward to coming into the next store and seeing some of these brands from some of these categories. Maybe we should chat again at the end of the year and see if we got it right.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Tomorrow brands, building the brands of tomorrow.